And you're listening to radio station WUSB in Stony Brook, where the time is 6:01. That means it's time, well, it's kind of late, actually, for Off the Wall. Good evening. Welcome to this evening's edition of Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour or so. We're going to start off with our weekly tribute to Tommy Chong as he languishes in prison someplace. I'm told he will be getting out in June. I believe June 6th was the date that I heard for selling bongs on the internet. Every time I say that, and I've said it dozens of times now, you know, we do this weekly tribute where we play a piece of his. In this case, we're going to be playing a couple of pieces because it kind of merged together. But every time I say it, it still doesn't, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. It makes no sense at all. Selling bongs on, I mean, not even selling drugs, you know? Not that there's anything that I see as a big major deal with, well, I'm not even going to get into that. But the point is, selling something that could be used with, it's just so crazy. And we accept it. Things get crazier and crazier, and after a while, you just kind of accept it. That's kind of the theme of the country right now, you know? And it's also the theme of the show. And I guess we'll be giving a few examples of that throughout the hour. Stay tuned. Here's Tommy. And Cheech Marin.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Horrendo Revolver, and welcome to Wake Up America. This evening on Wake Up America, we're going to take an in-depth look at the recording industry. Now, recently, the industry has undergone severe criticism for its alleged use of drugs, sex, and payola in the sale and promotion of records. Now, the building I'm standing in front of right now is Monster Recording Studios, where all the sounds of Shake the 60s were recorded. And we're going to walk inside the studio tonight, visit one of the sessions, just drop in unexpectedly, unannounced, and see what goes on. So here we go. We're going to open the door now and let the chips fall where they may.
Hold it. Security here. Where do you think you're going?
Excuse me, sir. I'm Horrendo Revolver, and these are my cameramen, and we're doing an expose on the recording industry, and we just want to drop into one of the sessions unannounced to see what goes on.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay, guys, let's go. Okay, we're going to just walk into the first session that we see. Oh, there's a red light on now. That means a session's in session. Okay, guys, let's hit it. We're going right through that door. This is Horrendo Revolver out here on the fire escape. And there's a magnificent view of the city that we thought you folks would like to see before we go back in the studios and have a great expose on the recording industry. Okay, folks, we're back inside the hallway now. And as you can hear, there's a session going on behind that door. It sounds very much like one of those English groups. So we're going to go through that door and see what's going on right now.
Oh, those burritos. Hey, I wouldn't go in there if I was you, man.
Oh, excuse me. Could you tell us, where is there a session in the studio?
Studio C, man. It's happening, yeah.
Oh, thanks a lot. Whew. Let's see. Studio C. Studio C. Oh, there it is, right over there next to Studio A. Come on, guys, let's go in. Yes, indeed, ladies and gentlemen. There's a session happening here, all right. We're just going to walk around and talk to some people now. Let's see. That man over there behind the board with a funny hat and a beard looks like the producer. Let's talk to him. Excuse me, sir. I'm Horrendo Revolver. And we're
hey,
here to do
man, a... where you dudes been, man? You've been hanging us up.
Well, we've been on the fire escape and in the bathroom.
Yeah, well, never mind all that. Now, which one's the tenor? You the tenor? Yeah, well, listen, here's your part. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul. You got that?
Wait a minute, sir. I don't think you understand. I'm Horrendo Revolver.
I don't understand. Look, dude, I'm the producer. I understand everything. You don't understand. Here's your part, sucker. Now get over there and sing it. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul.
Well, okay. Sweet soul sounds are stirring my soul.
Yeah, that's great, man. Only let's try it without the slobber this time.
Wait a minute, sir. I don't think you understand. I'm Horrendo Revolver from WHIC.
Oh, man. Oh, you a jock. Oh, I thought you was a background singer, man. Hey, listen. I'm Nemo. Nemo Drax, man. I'm the producer here. Hey, listen. What do you need, man? Anything you want, you got, brother. You want some coke? I got some dynamite bow for you. Want a little two for this note? It's no. Good, man. It's pharmaceutical. You blow your head off, man.
No, sir.
What do you want? Some smoke? Hey, I got some dynamite Jamaican flower tops, man. It one joint, that's right. Let's just roll the man a joint.
Well, I'm sure flower tops are very pretty, but what we're really after
is... Oh, right. I'm sorry, man. I should have started off with that. You want a broad. Right. Hey, you, baby. Yeah, you. Come on over here. Listen, you heard a deep throat? This is a sister sore throat. Man, be careful with her. She was at a big promotion convention, so she's a little tired, but she's a dynamite broad. Hey, baby, take care of her. Take care. What's your name?
Horrendo Revolver.
Take care of Horace for me, baby. Hey, but listen, man, before you get hung up with the broad, I want you to give a listen to this monster smash dynamite hit we've been working on, man. This tune is a monster, man. This sucker is so bad, it ought to jump on the charts at number one with a bullet. With your help, of course, you know what I mean. Hey, but listen, man. Really, this tune is different. It's a cowboy tune. Man, do you like country and western music?
Oh, sure. I think it's super.
Well, let's give a listen to this. Lester, let's do another take.
Take 48.
Hi, I'm Johnny Stash, and I'm here to sing about a great American dog, Black Lassie. Hit it, Carl. She was born in the Detroit ghetto during the riots of 65. Her daddy was a big fat alley rat, but he could lick a dog twice his size. Her mama was a long-legged Afghan, and she came from the high-class part of town. But late at night, when the moon got bright, her and the rat really went to town. Black Lassie, fat and sassy, she started poor, oh, but now she's rich. She's the queen of the doggy world. Oh, Black Lassie is a ghetto. But I'm talking about Black Lassie. Now I want everybody to listen while Carl plays with his wah-wah. Carl and his Wawa. Thank you very much, Carl. That's just fine. You can stop now, Carl. Carl, you can stop now. Give me that wall off, Carl. Everybody, play up, singing about a great American dog. Black glasses, fat and sassy. She started poor, but now she's rich. She's the queen of all the doggies in the world because of Black Lassie. She's a ghetto. Oh, but I'm talking about Black Lassie, a great American, half dog, half rat. Don't mess with her because she's a real... Oh, shut up yourself. I wasn't gonna say, bitch. I'm talking about Black Lassie. And just see little Jimmy now standing in front of that liquor store calling his dog.
Here, Black Lassie! Here, Black Lassie! Come over here, girl! Get out that trash can! Come over here! Woo! You see where you've been? Did that throw play with Ben again? Come over here, girl! I got a cheeseburger for you! That's not tip! Oh, that's a good girl! Oh, God, you're ugly! Little beady eyes! But I love you, girl! Yeah, sweet woman, girl, sweet woman. Oh, I love ya. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Hey, baby, is that a monster smash yet or not?
Oh, Mr. Trax, that was a super smash single. That's just sensational. I really want to thank you for all the help you've given me today.
Hey, baby, don't thank me. Just play my record.
Oh, I sure will. I'll play that record all the time. Thanks a lot, Mr. Trax.
Hey, thank you, brother.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have seen what goes on in the recording industry. I don't have to say a thing. It all speaks for itself. I can only say that what's happening in the recording industry only reflects what's happening in society today. This is Horrendo Revolver saying good night for Wake Up America.
Wake up, America, you're dreaming.
Come on, guys, let's get out of here.
Hold it. Security, where do you think you're going?
Oh, well, we're done now. We were just going to go home.
Just going to go home?
Yes, sir.
Well, I'm sorry. You'll have to have a pass.
Well, we don't have a pass.
You don't have a pass?
No, sir.
Well, how did you get in here?
Huh?
You, up against the wall. Turn around. Come on. All of you, turn around. Face the wall.
Okay. that's Cheech and Chong there. Boy, you know... Some stuff ages well and some stuff just doesn't. But interesting hearing about the recording industry. And yeah, that was from the Wedding album. We heard actually three pieces there. Wake Up America, Black Lassie, and Wake Up America Part 2. As part of our tribute to Tommy Chong. Remember, the reason he's in prison is not because of the comedy he put out, but because of daring to sell a bong on the internet. Right then. This is Off the Wall, and... It certainly is, isn't it? And we're going to look at some news events. We're also imploring people this week to give us a call as we're in the middle of a fundraiser. And we have all kinds of things to offer you, which I'll get into in a moment. Or you can just beat the rush and call now at 631-632-WUSB at 631-632-9872. Remember, the reason to call is to support the radio station, and that's how we stay on the air. The people there can tell you, they can advise you all kinds of things that you can get. But the real reason is to keep this place afloat. And we do this in the spring of every year. Because otherwise, we wouldn't be able to bring you these nice, cheery episodes of life that come your way every week on Off the Wall. Let's start with looking at the news. And boy, today has been an interesting news day, hasn't it? Has anybody been watching the 9/11 hearings? They've been on TV everywhere, even on the radio in some places. Well, the 9/11 Commission says the Clinton and Bush administrations used diplomacy rather than force against Osama bin Laden because they weren't sure a strike would take him out, and they lacked a clear mandate for war. The panel heard today from top officials from both administrations as it examined past U.S. approaches to terrorism. The current and former administration officials told a federal panel they took al-Qaeda seriously but couldn't justify war before 9/11. Secretary of State Colin Powell said President Bush and his security team understood that terrorism had to be among our highest priorities. Well, you could take that two ways, couldn't you? Yeah, well, knowing him, I think he only meant it one way. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld says that even if the U.S. had made a declaration of war against al-Qaeda, it wouldn't have prevented 9/11. Interesting. So then what's all this about? Rumsfeld says such an action might have been a bold strike. Actually, he said bold stroke. That sounded good. But he adds the Bush administration was still very new and had not yet put together a comprehensive policy for terrorism or any contingency plan. So Rumsfeld says such a declaration of war might not have been a good idea. He was responding to questions from 9/11 Commission member Bob Kerry, the former Democratic senator from Nebraska, argued that the U.S. should have taken stronger military action against al-Qaeda long before the 9/11 attacks. Former Defense Secretary William Cohen insisted that the Clinton administration couldn't have taken such military action since there would have been little public support for it. President Bush says if he had any information the terrorists were about to act, he would have acted to prevent the 9/11 attacks. Oh, good for him! Wow! I always had my doubts, you know. If he knew it was going to happen, would he take steps to prevent it? It's good to have that cleared up. All right. He's on our side. Bush is defending his anti-terror efforts from claims in a former top advisor's book that the administration did little to keep America safe. Bush insisted he was briefed repeatedly by CIA Chief George Kennett repeatedly because he didn't get it the first six times. I'm sorry, I shouldn't make fun. No, I have to make fun. Because it's the only thing left. All the tears have been cried out. Now it's just time to ridicule left and right. And hope that it wakes somebody up someplace. He says in the aftermath of the attacks, the administration moved aggressively against the terror network, targeting its worldwide operations and killing or capturing top leaders, many of whom escaped this week through a tunnel in Pakistan. Do you hear about this? Surrounding the top leadership of al-Qaeda, and all of a sudden they escape through this tunnel system that they say is a very comfortable tunnel system with walls painted white, a hospital included inside, and living quarters and all kinds of things. They never knew about it beforehand. Anyway, he says America will remain on the hunt as long as he's president. And we can look forward to more of this. The hearings continue tomorrow, and it should be quite interesting. Because the guy who wrote the book is going to be on tomorrow. And that book is going to be something. I mean, it is something already. But I'm sure we'll hear a lot more about that in the weeks, months, and maybe even years to come. And of course it goes on. It continues to go on. United Nations top two weapons experts said Sunday the invasion of Iraq a year ago was not justified by the evidence in hand at the time. I think it's clear that in March, when the invasion took place, the evidence that had been brought forward was rapidly falling apart, said Hans Blix, who oversaw the agency's investigation into whether Iraq had chemical and biological weapons. Now, these are the guys looking for the weapons that worked for the UN, you know? The guys that we kind of used as justification for going in there in the first place. Well, Saddam Hussein's not cooperating with these people. Well, now these people are saying, you know what, the whole thing was wrong. Blix described the evidence Secretary of State Colin Powell presented to the UN Security Council in February 2003 as shaky and said he related his opinion to U.S. officials, including National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice. I think they chose to ignore us, Blix said. That pretty much says it all, doesn't it? And you know, Condoleezza Rice wouldn't testify in public before the 9/11 Commission. She said she didn't want to set a bad precedent. A bad precedent. Can you imagine? What's a bad precedent about testifying in public about how you're doing your job? No, we can't answer for that. That's a bad precedent. Before you know it, everyone's going to be asking us questions. Just like in a democratic country. Can't have that. Good God. It's disgusting. It really is. Let's continue with some more cheery news. All right, you know what? I gotta implore people to call in. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. For a pledge of $25, you'll get a WUSB hat. Yeah, We don't kid around. The USB hat, it's a baseball cap. It's really cool looking. A lot of people wear it around here. And if you're calling from someplace else, you're guaranteed to have people coming up to you saying, what in God's name does that say on your hat? And if you want to continue upwards, you can pledge $35 and get a short-sleeve WUSB T-shirt. We have them in sizes S, M, L, XL, and XXL. It's an olive shirt. How many olive shirts do you have? It's got white lettering. It's got the WUSB logo. And if you don't like short-sleeve shirts, well, okay, for $50 you can get a long-sleeve shirt. With the same sizes, the same logo, the same lettering, except it's black, not olive. And then for the 90.1 Club, as we like to call it, because our frequency is 90.1, and for $90.10, you get both shirts, both the olive and the black, short sleeve, long sleeve. You'll get the WUSB hat, and you'll get a WUSB mug, which can be used for, I believe, either coffee or tea. Is that right? Okay, yeah, it works in both. It's a stainless steel travel mug. It's silver, as most stainless steel things are. It holds 17 ounces and has black lettering on it with the WUSB logo. You get that along with the other three clothing items for $90.10, or you can get it alone for $25. There, that's everything. That's what we have here this week. 631-632-9872. Let's see some calls come in, you know. Does this station mean something to you? I know a lot of people listen to the show on the Internet, and that does not preclude you from calling in and pledging and keeping this radio station going, because you're listening to it. You're listening to it. Even if you're listening on tape, I know it's harder for you to call in if you're listening on tape. But if you've listened on tape in the past and you find yourself now listening live at 6:23 p.m. Eastern Time, on, what is this, March 23rd, 2004? Well, then you can call in right now, 631-632-WUSB. Country code 1 for those of you in different countries. And, it keeps programs like this going. It keeps ideas, different music, things like that. We're going to get into this a little bit more in the hour ahead, because all of this is in danger, like it's never been in danger before. That's really pretty upsetting. But let's continue with the news. Iraqi police are taking heavy losses. Gunmen sprayed a van loaded with recruits south of Baghdad today, killing 9. Yeah, capturing Saddam Hussein really was the answer, wasn't it? It's all a cakewalk now. This kind of thing happens every day. How is it going to end? Will it ever end? It's unbelievable, isn't it? A year ago we were talking about this here and pretty much predicting just this kind of a thing. But we marched in anyway. It's really sad. A White House spokesman says rising health care costs, not the new prescription drug plan, are to blame for Medicare's dismal prognosis. The program's trustees said today the health care program will go broke within 15 years. See, it's bad news all around. It's no good news. You can provide the good news by calling us and pledging your support to the radio station. See how it works? Okay, let's try this. Another wave of copyright lawsuits from the recording industry. This time, the Recording Industry Association of America is targeting 532 people who are accused of illegally sharing digital music files over the Internet. Did you ever think you'd hear the phrase, illegally sharing? For the first time, the recording industry legal offensive is going after users of college computer networks. Nearly 90 of those being sued use networks at universities in 10 states. The rest of the defendants use commercial Internet services. I wonder if Stony Brook is being targeted here. We have computers. We have a network. But we don't have any phone calls. What's going on out there? 631-632-9872. All right, there's one. Thank you for that call. I hope that's a real call. Thank you very much. But there's other people sitting around, feeling worthless. Please, show your support. 631-632-WUSB. Without your support, we don't have anything to, we don't have money to keep the place going, pay the bills, fix the equipment. We don't get paid. I don't get paid for doing what I do here. That would be something, wouldn't it? It's not commercial radio, folks. You don't hear commercials. Other radio stations, you hear commercials, and that's why you don't hear this kind of a thing. And you don't have a choice there. You hear those commercials every hour, and you wind up paying for them because advertising is always factored into anything you buy. All right, I've had enough of the news. Putting it over there. 631-632-9872. If you've ever gotten something out of this particular program, please call in and give something back. Where do we start? Well, okay, how about some good news, all right? I'll just share some good news, because that might get everybody in a better mood, and then maybe they'll give us a call, 631-632-9872. Two calls. Thank you very much for that call. We have five lines, by the way. 631-632-9872. I don't know if people read the New York Times on a regular basis here, but if you were reading it last week on the 19th, you might have seen an article about my favorite topic, three calls. That's good news. 631-632-9872. Thank you very much to our listeners, because we're doing this for you. I've been going on about smart cars now for quite some time, talking on the radio about these cool little cars that I saw in Europe, and I'd love to have one here, except they're not approved for driving here. Only big tanks and Hummers and SUVs are approved. And it's really a bit frustrating, because these things are, they're two-seaters. They get something like 60 miles to the gallon, and they're just so cool-looking. Go to www.smart.com. You'll see what I'm talking about. Imagine seeing those driving around your neighborhood. Imagine driving one of those around your neighborhood. Yeah, you can't bring all six kids and the dog and, you know, whatever else that you buy at the Price Club in these things. But you know what? Maybe it's time to stop living a life of excess. Maybe it's time to just start, focusing on more important things. And cars are for transportation. They're for getting you from one place to another. They're not houses on wheels. And that's what I like about this particular car, is that it's basic, very basic. And I just know, you know, driving this kind of thing around town, around New York City even, because they're meant for cities. First of all, you can find parking spaces where no one else can find them. You can park between cars. It's that simple. I've seen it done overseas. But the attention you'll get, people will be chasing after you down the street, wanting to know how to get one. Anyway, the good news is, according to this New York Times article, the day may actually come where I, Emmanuel Goldstein, might be able to buy one of these cars in the United States. Yeah, that was the first paragraph. Most automotive fantasies involve a lot of horsepower, preferably wrapped in sheet metal, hammered to shape in a small town in Italy, but the car that Joan Hurley of Baltimore daydreams of owning one day is a diminutive two-seater with a three-cylinder engine and just 61 horsepower. It also gets 60 miles to the gallon. It's sort of a romantic notion, she acknowledged, of her infatuation with the smart city coupe, which she first saw while on vacation in Spain. As a romantic icon, the smart car is more Woody Allen than Humphrey Bogart. Its beguiling appearance exudes a Jetson-esque quality that would be at home in a support role in Sleeper. You know, these New York Times writers are just getting off on the literary illusions here. They just want to get the facts, okay? Okay, here we go. A few hardcore American enthusiasts, the Smart has become the automotive equivalent of a Cuban cigar. The eco-friendly commuter car is one of the trendiest fashion statements on European roadways today, and it's on sale in 30 countries, including Mexico. But though its maker, Daimler Chrysler, plans to begin selling a version in the United States in 2005 through its Mercedes dealerships, so far Smarts are unavailable on these shores, legally anyway. That may soon change. In January, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration agreed that two would-be smart importers could bring in the cars because they had shown they were capable of making smarts meet United States safety standards. That's right. The importers will buy their cars from dealers in Europe or Canada, because smarts are actually going to go on sale in Canada as well in September, and then they're going to sell them on what is essentially the gray market. Everything I do seems to be gray market these days. And they also have to service them because Daimler Chrysler said it would not take responsibility for cars it hadn't imported. Technically, conversion companies become manufacturers, assuming the responsibility for making any modifications necessary to meet American safety and emission standards. While European standards are similar, the differences that exist make it an expensive and time-consuming process for those hoping to bring in just a few cars. That's what John Bristol of Dallas said he discovered when he looked into importing several Smarts with the intention of driving one and selling the others. I looked into importing a few, but it was too difficult. I'm in the oil and gas business, and I can see a need for economical cars like this. The Smart line was originally conceived by Switzerland's Swatch watch company 10 years ago as an exercise in minimalist transportation. The idea was to create an economical yet stylish alternative to transportation in crowded city streets. And after a slow start in 1998, they are now selling briskly, with about 120,000 on the road. And as we mentioned, Canada will be getting a two-seat smart car this fall, but Americans won't be getting city coupes. Instead, they'll be getting small four-seat SUVs, about the size of a Honda CR-V, which is about the dumbest thing I've ever heard. What's the point, then? The American cars will be designed with the U.S. in mind. Meaning a lineup of conventional four-seat cars rather than the funky two-seat cars that many smart enthusiasts love. The bigger cars don't interest many of the smart fans. We don't have any kids, and my wife drives 7 miles to the work. I drive 10 miles. We aren't really interested in the larger cars, said Patrick Masterson from Virginia Beach. The way the small car is designed to be both extremely compact and yet relatively crash-worthy also appeals to Mr. Masterson. I have a respect for an unusual way of solving a problem. And fans say they're not worried about driving a car seemingly designed for a munchkin on American highways. Despite the current rage for tank-size SUVs and six-passenger pickup trucks, mostly I'm concerned about parking, said Hernan Lucas, whose principal commute is the 12 miles from Yonkers to Midtown Manhattan. His current car is a full-size Dodge pickup, so that's going to be interesting. Meanwhile, a few smart car owners are already driving their cars on the streets in the United States after bringing them in on the automotive equivalent of a tourist visa that assumes the cars will eventually go back to Europe. That's something I was thinking of doing. But it's not easy. So, good news. Looks like it might be possible. Of course, we'll be bringing a lot more information on just what's doable and whether or not this happens. Oh, we have people to thank. Thank you very much. Oh, very nice pledges here. Thank you, Kim, for that pledge from East Islip, New York. And Tony from Calverton, thank you for your pledge. And Robert from Brentwood, thank you again for your pledge. I wonder, do we have any Internet listeners? I know that net is down here, but hopefully the net isn't down anywhere else. So, yeah, we have to ask somebody out there who's listening on the Internet to call us. 631-632-9872, because... also, call us and pledge. Because otherwise, if you call us, we'll just jump for the phone, assume that there's a pledge there, and be very disappointed when there isn't one. So there must be somebody out there in Internet land that can spare a few bucks and throw it our way. This is your chance to kill all kinds of birds with that stone by telling us that, yes, in fact, you're hearing us on the Internet, and in fact, you want to contribute to the radio station. 631-632-WUSB. Again, many pledge levels here. Any amount is appreciated. And we have hats, mugs, shirts, sweatshirts, you name it. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Let's look at some other bits of news. The photographer who snapped John Kerry attending a 1971 anti-war rally says he and his photo agency intend to track down and possibly sue whoever doctored and circulated a photo that made it appear that the 27-year-old Vietnam veteran was standing next to Jane Fonda. The ultimate crime, yes. You might have seen that picture on the news. I certainly saw it all over the place in newspapers. But I didn't hear about this. I didn't hear that it was a doctored photo. They didn't put that on the news quite as much. But apparently somebody merged the shot of the Democratic presidential frontrunner, with another separate photo of Fonda, which was taken by photographer Owen Franken as the actress spoke to a 1972 rally in Miami Beach. The fabricated Carrie Fonda photo was circulated with an identifying logo of the Associated Press and became the subject of talk show fodder after it was placed on many websites as evidence of Carrie's anti-American activities after his war service. We're doing everything possible to track down who it was and bring them to justice, said Light, who said the Associated Press also intended to examine the issue of who would use the agency's copyright for fraudulent purposes. It's interesting that this guy was able to recognize the photo from over 30 years ago and say, that was one of mine, and John Kerry was not standing next to her. But, you know, look at the world we live in right now. If he was standing right next to her, that's bad enough where he can actually lose some points, you know? Because she was more outspoken, because she did things that annoyed some people. Some people call her Hanoi Jane. Okay, whatever. The point is, you stand next to all kinds of people, and you work with all kinds of people throughout various causes. And to be judged on that 30 years later is kind of crazy. It really is. It's different than, you know, things like cowardice or dishonesty or, you know, drunken rages and things like that. You know, that I could see being judged upon for a lot longer, but standing next to somebody on a podium, that's a little different. Okay, did any of you go to the rallies? The anti-war rallies took place this Saturday. That's right, we're celebrating the first anniversary of the war. And many people did that in New York City by coming into the city in droves. Crowds estimated, well, it depends who you talk to. I got there late, so it didn't seem like a whole lot of people to me. But I was told that if you were there around noon, that it was easily 100,000 people. And I can believe that. I can certainly believe that many people would show up. Crowds all over the world, in fact, were showing up for various rallies and protests. But I got to tell you, you know, it was kind of annoying because they pump at these rallies, they pump in all kinds of audio from the speakers. And there were a lot of good speakers there, don't get me wrong. Dennis Kucinich was there. All kinds of good things were said. But it just seemed like we were being pelted with propaganda from one particular side. Obviously, it's going to be an anti-war side no matter what. But I heard the word Palestine said more than I heard the word Iraq. I really did. Now, of course, the whole Palestinian issue is a major deal, and a lot of people feel strongly about that. But to say that you have to feel this way about the Palestinian issue if you feel that way about the Iraq issue, I think it's patronizing, I think it's alienating, and it just got to be kind of annoying after a while, because that seemed to be more the focus of the rally, was to protest against Israeli actions in the Palestinian lands. And, you know, I'm not saying that that's not a justified cause. I'm not saying it's a cause that I agree with, you know, but to link it so that you can't support one without supporting the other, I think that a lot of people get lost that way. And that seems to be a big problem with the left, linking all these things together and not accepting when people agree with you on one thing and disagree with you on something else. It's always been a big problem. Now, you know, the right has it easy because they just agree on everything. It's simple. It's simple when you take the simplistic route. You know, might makes right. How hard is that to debate? But the left is a little bit trickier, and that's why it's also more difficult to keep people together. But I think, you know, in the future of such rallies, we just focus on the things that we're there for: stopping this war in Iraq. Believe me, there's enough to talk about. You could fill 8 hours straight of just talking about that. You don't have to bring in all the other examples of what we're doing in the rest of the world and the history and that kind of a thing and the oppression of people and the Native Americans. And I mean, yeah, it's all tied together. But if you want strength, if you want unity on one issue, you need to keep those people together. And that's why I think so many people dispersed after the initial march. The reason I thought there were less people there was because I got there around 3 o'clock. And, you know, people went through the march and then they left. didn't really stick around for this rally. Because it just, it felt like you were just being yelled at over and over again with the same issues. Nothing really new. And nothing really pertaining as much as I would like it to be to the war, to the actual war. Believe me, there's so much you can focus on that just has to do with Iraq and why we're there and why we shouldn't be there. There are people who have served there, many soldiers that feel the thing is a big mistake, the many politicians who were against it from the start, so many activists who marched in the streets for months before the war actually began, and veterans from the previous Gulf War. That certainly pertains. Families of 9/11 victims. There's no reason to try and solve all the world's problems, you know, in one rally. It's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And then we have another rally for Palestinian rights. Fine. I'm there. And hopefully a lot of the other people will see the link, but to say that you have to see the link or you're not with us, big problem with that. All right. What else do we have a big problem with? We could use a few more phone calls. I'm going to assume the net is not up. I have to assume that. Okay, I'm going to make an exception here for those people in the tally room. If somebody listening on the internet wants to call in and doesn't want to pledge, all right, fine. We won't chastise you. We won't mock you. And we'll try to hold back the sadness that we feel when you do call in and say that you're listening on the internet but you do not want to pledge. We just need to know if anyone's listening on the internet right now. 631-632-9872. Because our net connection here is down for some reason. They fixed the power, finally. We've got power back all over campus. All right, I see a phone call coming in. If someone could just pick that up and verify that we are, in fact, on the internet, that would be very nice. Nobody's picking it up. Okay, well, you know, nobody's in there. Okay. Well, I guess I don't know what to think. I don't know what to think. But what I'm going to do, though, is read a story. That's a very scary story. And maybe that'll encourage some people to call in. 631-632-WUSB. And that, of course, is all the nonsense concerning indecency and the FCC. And boy, you know, this is something that's hitting all of us in radio very hard. I honestly do not know what is wrong with this country, because one instance of a mere flash from Janet Jackson and everybody goes ballistic. You know, like it's some kind of foreign invasion or something. It's total insanity. Complete and total insanity. And so now there's this big crackdown going on that affects everybody who broadcasts. It affects us right here at this radio station. Yeah, it's got us cowering in fear. Many of us are very scared now of what they could do. Because you've got this crazy guy, and I don't have any hesitation calling him completely crazy in the Joe McCarthy of 2004. Michael Powell, son of esteemed Colin Powell. Unbelievable. Going after and pledging to go after any station that he deems to be indecent or do anything that he defines as indecent. He was offended. He was shocked. He was mortified by the halftime show. Oh, good God. Give it a break, Michael. Come on. It was stupid. It was, you know, okay. I didn't like it either. But it didn't cause any trauma. It was just in bad taste. And you know what you do in bad taste? You just kind of don't let that person do that again. And you tell other people, don't you do that again, or you'll be, you know, banned from ever doing something for us again. Simple. Life goes on. Instead, no, we're talking, you know, court cases and fines and action and restrictions and cracking down on all kinds of things. And, it, you know, in the end, it involves speech. It involves people being afraid to speak their minds. It involves people being afraid to, you know, play certain types of music. Things that the audience wants. And those are the true victims. Yet Janet Jackson can be flashing her breast anywhere. She's not going to be affected by this. Clear Channel, they don't care. They're all too happy to join in with Michael Powell and restrict everybody who's on their airwaves, because it's not about radio for them. It's about money. It's about selling commercials. That's what it's always been about. So yeah, you know, they'll do whatever Michael Powell tells them to do, as long as they can keep their 1,500 radio stations. Yeah, they'll kick Howard Stern off the air, sure. They'll kick anybody off the air that they're told to. And on the subject of Howard Stern, I'm not a big fan. I really am not. But come on, has anybody actually been hurt by his antics? He's been doing radio for God knows how many years now. And I don't think it's gotten any more tasteless than it was in the past. Not my cup of tea, but there are a lot of people, obviously, who like to listen to it. What's the big deal? Leave them alone, let them listen to the radio program they like to listen to, and you tune to something else. Michael Powell, the rest of the FCC, go listen to your Bible-thumping station someplace. I consider that indecent. But I'm not trying to stop you from doing it. Anyway, let's look at this article before I really get mad. And our phone number is 631-632-9872. Please pledge money. Keep this radio station afloat. Because believe me, I'm not kidding when I say stations like this are in grave danger with lunatics like that in power. By later this month, the FCC hopes to have the tools in place to increase fines for instances of broadcast indecency violations. At the least, fines will rise. Chairman Michael Powell supports that. And so do all four fellow commissioners. Lawmakers in February were discussing other possible steps to rein in broadcasters who are out of control, including license revocations, restoring a version of the old broadcast programming code, and adding a requirement that stations keep tapes of all programming for a specified amount of time. That's right. We must watch everybody. The five FCC commissioners testified before Congress over broadcast indecency in back-to-back hearings in the Senate and House in February. Powell urged lawmakers to pass bills to raise the levels of fines for broadcast indecency violations at least tenfold. Good God. So that means that a station that normally would get fined, say, $25,000, which is an obscene amount to start with, talk about obscenity, and that for simply having a word go by in a rap song or something. God help us. Instead of that, though, it's going to be $250,000 now. Which basically puts a station out of business. What kind of effect does that have on free speech? Okay, I guess we don't have anybody answering phones, so maybe save those calls for next week. Sorry. We'll assemble an army for that. But thanks for the people who are trying to call in. The five FCC commissioners, yeah, I said that already. We need this increased authority to ensure that our enforcement actions are a meaningful deterrence and not merely the cost of doing business, according to Powell. He's challenged broadcasters to reinstitute a voluntary code of conduct. Additionally, Powell pledged to begin license revocation procedures for egregious and continued disregard of the decency laws and begin treating multiple indecent utterances within a single program as constituting multiple indecency violations. Man, this guy is out of his mind. He just simply wants to crack down on anybody as death penalty next. Why not? And, you know, this disregard of the decency laws, as he calls them, when asked to give some clear guidance, clear guidelines, according to one broadcaster, he said no, saying that's a trap. Clear guidelines are a trap. He says the guidelines are clear. Well, they're not clear to me, and I don't think they're clear to just about anybody who works in radio these days. Powell traditionally has shied away from having the FCC regulate content, but that's that's all out the window now. The American Civil Liberties Union says the ambiguity of current law, coupled with higher fines, would have a chilling effect on free speech. By the way, this article is coming from a great publication called Radio World, which deals with such issues. Commissioner Michael Copps said the FCC also should reform its complaint process to take the burden of proof off those who make the complaints and also add graphic violence to the indecency standard. Cable and satellite broadcasters need to be part of any voluntary conduct code. Commissioner Kevin Martin said radio personalities that we have fined for indecency violations just moved to satellite radio. So these guys want satellite as well. There's no escape. You can't go to a pay service. They'll track you down there as well, make you conform to their romper room standards. It's pathetic. And we're just letting it happen. Upton's telecom subcommittee passed a bill to raise broadcast indecency penalties drastically in February. The full House Energy and Commerce Committee was expected to take up the measure later in the month. That, by the way, Chairman, House Telecom Subcommittee Chairman Representative Fred Upton, Republican of Michigan. And if passed by both houses of Congress, House Resolution 3717 would increase the basic fine for an indecency violation from the current $27,000 amount to $275,000 per violation with a cap of $3 million. Oh, thank you for the cap. And leading up to the vote were hearings on broadcast indecency. Lawmakers discussed adding various provisions to the legislation. These include revoking the license of a station found to be airing indecent programming more than three times. And you know how easy it is to define something as indecent. We'll get into that in weeks ahead, but it's not hard at all. I can point to virtually any radio station short of maybe classical music stations and find instances of indecency. Some news items we read have indecency in them by whatever standards you wish to subscribe to. And certainly if you listen to Michael Powell, you'll hear all kinds of standards that you never thought were indecent. They're also considering making networks responsible for paying the fines rather than affiliate stations, having the broadcast indecency guidelines also cover violence. I don't know how that's going to work. And restoring the broadcast programming code and requirements for stations to save recordings of programs. That's what we were mentioning before. As lawmakers grilled the commissioners, as well as Viacom President Mel Karmazin and NFL Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, the NAB announced it plans to hold a private all-industry summit to address topics related to responsible programming. The first-of-its-kind meeting to be held in early spring comes in response to growing concerns over program content from parents. Broadcasters have a long history of being responsive to community needs, whether it be Amber Alerts, coverage of local issues, emergency weather warnings, or providing airtime for charities. The time has come for a full and frank dialogue with our media colleagues on voluntary programming and responsibility. There's a lot more to this. Unfortunately, we don't really have the time to get into it this week. But suffice to say that we're facing a very dark period in radio and broadcasting in general, where something as silly as what happened during the Super Bowl can actually be used to really clamp down hard on all kinds of ideas and subjects that I think we have every right to be talking about and presenting in various ways on radio and through television and all kinds of media. There was a great documentary. I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week I mentioned it. Great documentary called Deadline Iraq that I saw on CBC up in Canada. You would not be able to show that in this country because it's indecent. But I got to tell you, it is one of the best documentaries I have ever seen. And it aired uncensored over the air in Canada And they seem to be holding up pretty well up there. You know? They're not falling apart because they heard certain words uttered or saw certain images that could be disturbing. If you don't like that kind of thing, you watch something else. You listen to something else. For some reason, we're not capable of making that decision. We have to have Michael Powell and his cronies up there making these decisions for us. And as a station, of course, we have to abide by that. But as individuals, I think we all have the obligation to speak out against it. If you want to see that documentary, well, you won't find it in the United States, unfortunately, because, well, we're just prevented from seeing things like that. But the thing that I think is most interesting about this is that it's a documentary that features a lot of American journalists, people that you're familiar with, people that you see on your television every night. And they're saying to the television that it's all a load of crap, that it's all something that was not what you thought it was, that they were broadcasting over the air. They're saying that in their own words. And we can't see that. It's amazing. If you plug it into a search engine, go to Google and plug in Deadline Iraq, Uncensored Stories of the War. That's the full title. Somewhere, if I had net connectivity here, I'd be able to tell you exactly where, but somewhere there is a site that is streaming this. You can click on it, and I think if you have Reel 1, you can actually watch this on your computer. Looks awful, but it's the best you can do. Until they start selling videotapes of this particular piece. Well, that's all we have time for this week. So stay tuned for the blues. We'll be back again next week, and we'll be taking phone calls with your pledges. Emmanuel Goldstein, have a good night.